Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Guy Barlow, Cam Ramsey and Dom Betts of the Fulhamish podcast. Life is, of course, about choices and you've made a very, very good one to join us this evening. Fulham have been making some quite good choices recently too. Since relegation, they've made the choice to just win every game.
Scott Parker's lease of new life.
Yeah.
Don't care. Honestly, he's done fantastically well.
Well, it's here to ruin everyone else's season, mate.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. There's been that tweet that gets retweeted every time we win, just like about us being a loose horse at the Grand National. just ruining everyone else's season. Which, as we said many weeks ago, we were more than happy to ruin Cardiff's season.
Oh.
Mm. So do you think that you relegated Cardiff? Of course, it was a 1-0 win, a spectacular strike of a football from Ryan Barbal. Is that curtains for Cardiff in the Premier League? And does that bring you just a little bit of schadenfreude?
Well, it's a big nail in the coffin, really, isn't it? And that's what we set out to do. And, you know, looking at the games in, you know, the weeks to come that we had, Cardiff was certainly a game that we thought, this has definitely got to be a win for us, you know, just to get one over Colin, really.
Well, no, I was quite annoyed that it was a 1-0 goal. I really wanted to really an offside, really scrappy winner in the 93rd minute, just to have a 0-1 run. But then I think someone tweeted out that no matter what the result was going to be, Warner was going to mention £100 million spent by Fulham. I don't think he actually did.
No, but he mentioned how like Babel was like the most expensive player on the pitch.
He was literally on a two point.
He was free. Like he mentioned how the player who scored that goal was probably worth the most money, isn't he? And we literally got him for free.
Yeah, a 30-something-year-old former Dutch wonder kid. Yeah, all right.
But the way we did win it was pretty satisfying as well, though. Like we hung on in the last 10. But
I didn't get is. The way Cardiff played for the first 80 minutes, we're like they were playing for a draw. I was like, a draw is not enough for you. No, if Brighton get a result tonight, which in this, it was on a Saturday evening. If they got a result in that game, which they kind of did, they got the draw against Newcastle, which is a good result for them. You know, I don't know why Cardiff weren't playing like they did in the last 10 from the off.
But that last 10 minutes was frantic, though, wasn't it? And, you know, credit to Sergio Rico between the sticks for being our saviour once again, like he has done in the last three games.
Yeah.
Revelation.
But no, as you say, Dom, Cardiff have only got themselves to blame.
Yeah.
Like, their tactics were horrendous. I mean, you forget until you watch them in the flesh that, like, they slow everything down. Every throw-in, every goal kick.
I don't forget that. I've seen the Warnock sides before.
No, but, like, when you're actually there, it's like, you just realise how much they actually do it. Like, near Lethbridge, if it's a goal kick, Cardiff goalkeeper, going and having a chat with the centre-back, have a chat with the right-back, then going to get the ball, putting it down, plonking it forward. They might win a throw-in, have another chat, throw it in. It's slowing the game down.
They're just making sure all their teammates are all right.
But we are the worst defence in the league. And they proved that they created like 7 chances in the last 10 minutes, what you class as a chance. And if they'd done that all game, they would beat us so easily.
Well, that is a problem, though, for Cardiff, isn't it? It's creative invention going forward. Victor Camarasa has looked very lively at points this season. But apart from that, what are we dealing with?
All they have is Gunnarsson's long throw, really. And we talk about slowing the game down, but it's so predictable and you just regroup. You know, it's easy to actually withstand because it's just a big, long, looping cross into the box. We've gotten better at attacking those, actually, in the last couple of weeks, which is really strange.
Well, we seem to be able to adapt to our fullbacks bombing forward that we don't seem like we're going to concede all the time. Because previously, if Christie and Brian were to bomb forward, you'd be really worried for the defence. But, you know, they seem to have adapted the team in a way that, with Callum Chambers maybe dropping in, that, you know, we still feel safe with the three defenders back, with, obviously, Chambers, as I said, dropping in. So, it's helping us that we can now let our fullbacks bomb forward. We've seen it with Christie, we've seen it with Brian, especially Brian in the last two or three games. I think he's been great. I think I touched on it last week against Bournemouth. He was making a lot of inside runs and, you know, he seems to really enjoying his football at the moment. I mean, so has Christie for the goal, made just an incisive run straight through the middle of the pitch. They're not going down on the overlaps. They're cutting inside on the wingers and making runs inside the pitch into the inverted fullback positions. And, you know, it's great to see, because obviously it's nice to see us finally win some games and keep some clean sheets. I mean, everyone said, oh, you're relegated, depressed. I don't care. We're winning games.
Yeah. And I mean, you could say that they should have had a penalty in the first half for that foul Mitrovic on Sean Morrison.
Yeah.
I mean, the week before, Morrison on Salah was less of a penalty than this one was, you know. But it's Cardiff, so I don't really care. And as you said, it's great to give something for Warnock to complain about in the post-match.
Let's just touch on Sergio Rico. Cam, you mentioned his name just a moment ago. When you win 1-0 and you score a screamer, the obvious talking point is always going to be the screamer, going to be Ryan Babel. But actually, Rico, as you said, in the last few weeks, and particularly against Cardiff, has been spectacular. Where has this come from?
Well, it kind of stems throughout the squad, doesn't it? I mean, he's got nothing to play for anymore apart from his future at Sevilla when he goes home, really. I mean, you've just got to put a little bit
of pride. Well, he's got to be playing for a move. Like, because he's not going to get back in goal for Sevilla, because he wasn't getting in goal this season. They had a relatively successful season.
Well, it was always those kind of odd comments he made earlier in the season where he says that he actually enjoyed the Premier League. Not necessarily Fulham, but he liked it over in England. So maybe there could be a club angling for him and he's certainly grown into
it. As I said, a lot of teams look at the relegated sides, see, oh, what players can we snap up? Obviously, I said Rico's not our player, but, you know, looking at him recently, he's saying, oh, he is a good goalkeeper. If he moved to a team, I don't know, off the calibre of a, I don't know, of a, I know Everton, it won't be Everton because they've got Jordan Pickford.
Like
but
a Bournemouth.
Yeah, a Bournemouth or maybe, I know, West Ham got Fabianski, but a team, a mid-table side, basically. I think they could look at Rico and think, yes, if they are a team who likes to play the ball out of the back, then he would suit them. And I think, you know, he had a bit of an off period in the month before Scott Parker got appointed, but I think everyone had an off period in that month, so I don't think you can really call to that. But yeah, it's been good to see, obviously. But I did think people were overlording his performance on Saturday more than they should. There was nothing he saved which he shouldn't have saved.
That's right. They're routine saves, but he's kind of been criticised recently for flapping at, you know, innocuous crosses into the box in particular, and, you know, he's had a few weird kind of like jibes from the crowd as well, even the home supporters giving him a little bit of an odd time. You know, it's difficult when the screw is being turned, you know, the last couple of moments, and Cardiff, they have such an aerial threat. And you're right, they should have actually done a lot better in front of the target, but Rico was there. He was
especially that Morrison chance in the last minute.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Exactly. That
needs to be headed into the ground and across the goal.
Yeah. Well, he tried to head it across him. He just, I don't know.
It's Morrison.
Didn't get it far enough across. Yeah, that was brilliant as well, wasn't it? I know you've got a particular disdain for Morrison, Dom.
It's still a pin tweet, mate. It's over a year old now. It's still a pin tweet.
I'm not his biggest fan either.
So remind me, there was a falling out with Morrison.
Yes, it's Morrison. It wasn't even to do with Fulham.
No.
He was criticising...
Jason Shackle.
He's just a nasty...
Yeah, Shackle and Keogh.
There was like a leaked video of him, like, I don't know, he must have been drunk on a minibus.
We don't know if he was drunk or not.
Okay, well...
Allegedly under the influence or something.
Yeah, he was mocking some fellow professionals. And it was like,
then,
including Jason Shackle.
Also, the goal he did concede, which Jerome scores, is one of my favourite goals of all time because it's so bad. There's so much housery involved in it. The ball hardly touches the floor. I think who would have been the Cardiff goalkeeper? Would have been Neil Etheridge. Has the ball, drops it on the floor, and then Jerome sort of pushes Morrison out of the way and bundles it into the far post. But a beautiful goal. More of those goals are needed. Roll on the championship.
You're looking forward to Brexit football, I take it.
Yeah, as we discussed last week, tucks in shirts, none of this tippy-tapper stuff. Get the ball forward and score goals.
Roll those sleeves up.
It's all you need.
Get the ball forward and score goals. It's all you need. I believe that's Pep Guardiola's philosophy. That's actually every team talk. Just wanders into the dressing room and goes, "Oi, Kevin, don't worry about that. Just get it forward, score goals." Very, very simple. In order to score goals, you do, of course, need players, some talented players. And the big question now for Fulham is which of their most talented assets will stick around in the Championship. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Guy Barlow, Cam Ramsey and Dom Betts of Fulhamish. A quick update for you from this evening's Championship action. It's currently Derby 1, Swansea 0. And in the Champions League, Barcelona 1, Liverpool 0. The goal scorer for Barcelona was, of course, a face who's quite familiar to the good people of Liverpool, a certain Mr. Luis Suarez. Scored against his former club and celebrated. Is that poor form?
No, it's against Liverpool. That's great, Val.
Yeah. I love it, yeah. And I also love how you went to the Swansea derby game ahead of the Liverpool-Barcelona one as well. That is the more important game,
I agree. It's a big game. Come on.
Yeah, it's a great... Well, it might be a great game, but it certainly is a big game.
Are you taking glee in the fact that Suarez celebrated simply because it's Liverpool? I mean, if we broaden this...
Yes is the answer.
If we broaden this, Dom Betts, into perhaps a wider moral question of footballing ethics, is it poor form to score against your former club and celebrate?
Unless it's like your hometown team or a team you played like... 300-400
Robin
games
Van Persie. Sorry, yeah, carry on.
I don't see the problem. Like, unless it's a team you have genuine affection for, then I think that'd be the only thing that would stop you celebrating. Like, I'd probably see if Sessegnon moved to Spurs and he scored against us, he probably wouldn't celebrate. But let's say, I don't know, Mitchell's a good example, but if Kearney scored against us and celebrated, I'd be like, okay. I feel like someone who's got real affection with a club.
Former club captain Tom Kearney, you wouldn't be upset if he celebrated a goal against Fulham.
No, I'm not someone to get upset over those things. I'd still probably shout expletives at him, but I do that with most opposition players anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
So, it's not something that would annoy me. It's Liverpool, so who cares? So.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I wouldn't be any more upset than just conceding a goal in general, you know? Like, obviously, I'm annoyed every time we concede. So if it's Kearney, I don't know. It's actually a bit of a weird one. Even though he is club captain, he doesn't necessarily feel like a club captain. And I guess he will go down as a legend, but it's hard to see that now. Do you know?
I guess it depends on what kind of celebration it is, how creative it is, you know, how much thought have they put into it. Is it premeditated?
Mm.
If it was just a, you know, unbridled...
Reveals a T-shirt saying, I hate Fulham.
But also, it depends on the context. If he scores a last-minute winner against us...
Yeah, that's one thing.
Celebrate.
It was like Welbeck's goal against United. Against United.
Glorious.
Like, you have to celebrate that. You can't score last-minute winner away from home at one of your main rivals and not celebrate. That is poor etiquette.
That would be...
Don Betts is pulling no punches. He is putting the world to rights here on the Fulham Fan Show. If you'd like to put the world to rights, or indeed you'd like to put Don Betts wrong, you can get involved on 0208 70 20 558. Is it poor form to celebrate against your former club? One man who you suggested could be doing that, Dom, next season is a certain Mr. Ryan Sessegnon, being linked with a few other clubs. It's tricky, this, for Fulham, because you've had a season obviously full of disappointment, but equally full of some quite bright moments from certain players. And when you get relegated, as is always the case, the vultures start circling. So let's just have a think about who might hang around, who might leave. We're hearing links of Jean-Michel Seri away from the club.
Good.
Get out.
That's harsh.
Oh, come on. He's not going to survive in the Championship.
It's not that. But like,
get him out.
Yeah, but like, it's not as in get out, like kick him out. Like, yeah. No, as in like, yes, he's going to leave. But
slowly open the door and roll him out.
Yeah, but like... But
on a very nice carpet.
But not like good riddance. More like...
No, to be fair, when he first joined in the first few games, I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the team got into a bad run of form, I feel like he sort of, not down tooled as such, but... Yeah, I haven't been impressed with him recently. I thought he played all right against Bournemouth last week. But for me, like, now he's been relegated, I don't see the point in giving Jean-Michel Seri game time because he's not going to be at the club next season. It looks like he's been linked with Monaco. No fee's been suggested. Obviously, he was involved in an alleged not 100% legit deal in the Maxime Lemarchand double sweep was in Nice last summer. So, you know, obviously, we supposedly bought him for, £20-25 million. And, you know, I think we should be able to get, I don't know, 15 or so
I'd say
for him.
15 mil. Yeah.
A team like Monaco, but Monaco will have the money because they're obviously going to be selling Youri Tielemans to whoever this summer for £40-50 million, probably, whether that's Leicester, whether that's Arsenal, whether that's United, whether that's Chelsea, whoever. So we'll have the money to bring in another centre midfielder. And I think, him going back to Liga could be the best deal for him.
Yeah, but I mean, the only thing I objected to then was just like the whole get him out thing, you know? Yeah. Because like, I think it's not like a go away, you're a disgrace. It's more like, it could have been so much more, you know? It's more like disappointment than anger towards him. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many more players, I just need to get out the door.
Yeah, like, Schürrle is like, go away and never come back.
Yeah, he's certainly one for that sentiment. Yeah.
What if he celebrated against Fulham?
I would jump onto
him. I mean,
pitch.
Even if...
and I would chase him.
You do care.
No, I'd hate... I just don't want to see his face ever again.
I never want to see him at Craven Cottage, yeah. He's a disgrace.
Even if he was playing for Barcelona and it was a Champions League semi-final.
Well, you wouldn't because it's Andre Schürrle and he's rubbish. But...
Exactly.
I love that you went to Andre Schürrle's rubbish rather than Fulham won't be in a Champions League semi-final. But there we go. Confident at the very least.
I think the main one that everyone's talking about is our key players. The likes of Kearney, the likes of Sessegnon, the likes of Mitrovic. We start with Sessegnon because I think... He, out of all our key players, I think he's the most likely one to leave.
Yeah.
Just because it's an interesting debate. I mean, it's, you know, because obviously his contract runs up at the end of next season. He hasn't indicated in any way that he's going to be signing a new deal. And obviously he's been linked with the likes of Spurs, Juve and Dortmund. And I think if anyone's going to buy him in the summer, it would only be Spurs, because Juve and Dortmund know they can wait until January and get him on a free with just under £1 million compensation the following summer. And they're not in urgent need for him. But so if Spurs were going to sign him, I think the rumoured fee is about £25 million because of his contract only have 1 year left. I mean, I'm of the opinion, like, and was like, oh, he's got 1 year left. We're losing for free next summer. We've got to take the money. I'm just like, you don't see any of that money. Surely you'd like to see Sessegnon in the Championship playing for Fulham for one more season.
I'm sure he would, actually, deep down as well, to be quite honest, even if he is stalling on some kind of a contract deal.
Well, might another year in the Championship also be the best possible thing for Sessegnon's career?
It could be a rejuvenation, yeah. And I'm saying, if I've always stood by the fact that if he was to leave, I'd love the club to seek a loan-back clause straight away so we have him for that one more season in the Championship.
Perhaps a sell-on fee?
Potentially, yeah.
I mean, I think financially, the club kind of need to sell him in the summer because they can't afford to let a player like Sessegnon go on a free transfer. So if we were to sell him to Tottenham for, I don't know, £25-30 million, and then they were to loan him back to us for the following season, then I'd be like, okay, I can maybe accept that. But yeah, if not, you know, to be fair, if I'm looking at him, like, I'd quite like him to go abroad.
I think it'd fit in really well at Dortmund.
It'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Sessegnon on one side, Sancho the other, Pau Alcacer down the middle, yeah. Marco Reus down the middle, Gosso in behind.
It's a proper hipster football team.
Even at Juve, linking up with Moise Keane, you know?
Oh, no, please don't go to Juve. You know how I feel about Juve.
All right, we'll stick with Dortmund then, but they have a great track record of pulling through the youth players, you know, making them into real top stars. So,
I'm looking at some of the other teams. If we move on to Mitrovic, if Mitrovic went to Brighton, that would be really disappointing as well.
I might contemplate
jumping.
Can
that happen? Are Brighton going to pay? What are you going to have to pay to get Mitrovic?
I think 45?
I think 40-50 million minimum. And Brighton don't have the money to spend. I think West Ham probably do have that money to spend. And they're going to be looking, if, let's say, Arnautovic doesn't stay at West Ham, the ceremony goes off to wherever, they'll be looking for a big target man up front. And Mitrovic to West Ham, you could see viable. Yep. But I don't want him to go. And also, the thing is with Mitrovic is, all the signal he's giving off and all the things he's saying, it's like he wants to stay.
I think Mitrovic needs that familiarity and he needs to be nurtured and loved by the fans as well. You know, that's how you get the best out of him.
You've got players with ability who can fit in anywhere. Mitrovic has the ability, but I feel like Mitrovic's play can only blossom in a place where he feels loved and a place he wants to be. And I think Fulham is that place. And, you know, he's been tapping a badge on his shirt every single game. He's been saying we're the best fans in the world after Bournemouth. And I think he genuinely wants to stay at the club.
Yeah, I think he might get that love elsewhere, though, Cam. You know, like, I mean, obviously, we think we're special as fans, but in reality, other fans can be as special, you know. Like, and he was in that bubble at Newcastle, but he's never, like, got him.
He never took to it, really.
For whatever reason, you know, it looks like a slight on Rafa. He never actually got the best out of Mitrovic. I think that the money you just mentioned there, 40, 50 million, is definitely about right. I mean, if you look at the players.
So he also only joined us on a permanent last summer, got 3 years left on his contract?
Yeah,
4 years left
on his contract? He's got 11 Premier League goals this season. If you look at other players, he's got 11 million. Like Ashley Barnes has got 11. Mm. Like Sigurdsson has got nearly that.
But that's because it all rebounds from penalties, though.
it is a lot of pens for Sigurdsson.
Well, missed penalties that he's then later tapped in, I think.
Also playing in midfield, not a striker. But then you could say Mitrovic is playing for a terrible relegated team. I don't know, but If you were to compare him and Ashley Barnes, even though they've got the same number of goals, you'd take Mitrovic every day, wouldn't you?
Every day, yeah.
It would be really interesting where he ends up. But I know he's making noises about like loving the fans, the same as the best in the world, but I just can't see him saying.
I think we share that affinity with him, though, because he did come to us, obviously, last season on that initial loan, and he catapulted us up the division with his goals that were so pivotal. And I guess that's why we share such a connection with him. You know, if he was going to go to someone like West Ham, it's just that rebuilding process, and he might not hit the heights which he did at Fulham formerly. And, you know, that can turn quite sour for a player that kind of thrives on that kind of energy. So,
yeah, no.
You never know.
I kind of feel like Mitrovic can go bigger than West Ham. Like, I know it's a bit of an odd shout, but I don't know, if Inter were to sell Mario Icardi, Mitrovic is a player, he may be not as athletic and quick as Icardi, but he can hold the ball up for them and would terrorise a lot of the defenders in Serie A. Inter Milan are going to be in the Champions League next season. I know they're not necessarily interested in him, but I think that would be a better career move for him if he was to move on.
It pains me to say, but I think Chelsea are crying out for a striker like him, though, to run the line. Not necessarily as mobile as someone like a Diego Costa.
I just can't see, in a Maurizio Sarri system, Mitrovic working. Because if you look at the way he played under Napoli, Ardias Milik didn't do that well.
Mm.
He's only come on bounds this season under Carlo Ancelotti.
But they've missed that kind of brawn up top, regardless. You know, that's typically how how Chelsea like to approach it.
Also looking at this, is I forgot about two players on this list even existed in Lazar Markovic and Luciano Vietto.
So the words I have in front of me for Lazar Markovic are, I think, the most damning sentence in the English language. It's not "you are terrible." It is simply "offered to Belgian clubs."
But like,
Belgian clubs, though?
And at the point where you're being actively touted to the Belgian Super League, no disrespect to the likes of Anderlecht.
I don't understand. What do you mean offered? He's not even our player. He's going to be a free agent this summer. Like, how can we even offer him out?
I don't know. It's this list you're on, Football Manager, you go, "offer to clubs." Just someone buy it.
And then he doesn't want to move and you go, "speak to clubs yourself, son." You're not hanging around.
Release on a mutual termination. And then Luciano Vietto's deal, permanent deal to Sporting Club de Portugal, looks like a pretty much done deal.
Really?
Yeah, it looks like a 5-year deal from Atletico Madrid.
5-year deal?
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's a bad bit of business.
I mean, I feel like Luciano Vietto could sort of do bits in Portugal because the play isn't that fast.
Do you think he's still someone who's dining out on a reputation that he had as a kid? Because he was so highly rated.
I think that season where he's up front for Villarreal and he got, what, 20-plus goals, I think he is dining off that a bit. There is ability there. We have seen it this season. He is a creative player. He's scored one goal, but
he's basically a bad Alexandre Pato, isn't he?
But like, Simeone is now got a... You know, he kind of destroyed, arguably, Vietto's career, and he's destroying, like, Lamar's career at the moment as well. Like, players who seem to have loads of attacking flair go to Atletico and then end up at relegated Fulham.
So are we getting Thomas Lamar on a loan deal next season? I'll take
Thomas
it.
Lamar.
We quickly touched on a few that in transfer rumours looking to come in. Matthijs Zimmermann from Fortuna Düsseldorf, a right back. I think he's got one goal and three assists this season. You know, Düsseldorf, they're not going down, but they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything special. I actually saw Düsseldorf play one season. I saw him play Nuremberg, I think it was. I don't know. Right, he's got to be an upgrade on Saras Christie. So
it's not hard.
Yeah, it's not hard. And you know, he's had a few relatively renowned teams in his time, you know, Stuttgart, Greuther Fürth.
He played for a lot of German teams, so that hopefully means he might be able to defend. And one was being linked today was Marcel Taylor Crossdale, a striker, young striker from Chelsea.
England under 20 international, I think, in is it the Checker Trade Trophy that the under 23s play? And he's featured in like 15 games and scored one goal, so it's not, you know, barnstorming records.
Corley Woodrow part two.
He's not going to be Tammy Abraham, is he?
Well, no.
Corley Woodrow's back in the championship.
I know, we're getting him back in, mate.
Let's get him in.
He's bagged goals.
But that's the thing. I mean, we'll touch on this a little bit later on in the show. But you know, we've got our own prospects in the youth systems that we could possibly use. So I don't know why we need to go shopping at Chelsea for players that aren't necessarily hitting the heights that they should do anyway.
Do you think we've got a buyback for Scorley?
Mate, Scorley Woodrow just gets goals.
I'd love him to come back, boys. I really would.
He never got the opportunity, as far as I'm
concerned.
He's so bad. What do you mean?
Don't be rude. Talking to people who aren't bad, Dwight Gayle is one of those bizarre strikers who seems to bang them in the Championship. And then as soon as he goes to the Premiership, he forgets which foot is which. You will, of course, be in the Championship. He does score goals at that level. He's been having a successful season for West Brom, 23 in the league. Would you take him, even if it meant Kenny going the other way?
We hear this all the time, though, don't we? You know, it's perennial. It happens all the time. Don't get me wrong, I'd like Dwight Gayle, but you know, we've got in brackets on the sheet we've got in front of us a Kearney swap deal. I wouldn't swap him for Kearney. I really wouldn't.
I probably would.
Would you?
Yeah, I think so. I think Kearney's actually getting on a bit, isn't he? I mean, well, I say getting on. He's 28.
Yeah.
But turning 29. I don't know. Dwight Gayle is a bit younger, is he? And he's going to get you goals, isn't he?
He's prolific in the Championship, I'll give him that. But
he is. He could be a good addition, particularly if Mitrovic goes. And you heard it here first. Dwight Gayle is 16, going on 17. Lots more to talk about in the Fulham Fan Show. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Arsenal. Who are they? It's not the Arsenal Fan Show. It's the Fulham Fan Show, of course, here on Love Sport Radio. London calling, Fulham calling, Fulhamish calling. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Guy Barlow, Cam Ramsey and, of course, Dom Betts of the Fulhamish podcast. And I think, gents, it's time for the biggest question of all. You need a gaffer. The man in charge currently is actually doing a very, very good job. Does Scotty Parker deserve it on a permanent basis?
My issue isn't that I think Scott Parker's done so well, I think he should get the job. It's the other managers we're being linked with. So I don't want Steve Clarke.
No.
I don't want Neil Lennon. I've said it multiple times. If Neil Lennon becomes our manager, I'm going to spot two and a Mitchum until he leaves. So, on the basis of who's been linked with the job, obviously everyone said Wagner, but he's been linked with a Schalke job. I don't see him quite taking Fulham in the Championship over Schalke in the Bundesliga. So, Yeah, at the moment, I would take Scott Parker for next season. The players seem to want to play for him. Him and Stuart Gray do have that partnership. He's worked under so many good managers. He's worked under Pochettino. He's worked under Djokanovic. You know, he's worked under managers where he's learned different styles of football, and he seems to have adapted. He seems to be getting better week by week here. And, you know, we seem to be a lot more resolute about whether that's down to Stuart Gray. I mean, it probably is.
Probably is.
But, you know, for me, he isn't apart from, you know, the getting away at Watford when we conceded four, but we've conceded that goals in games under Ranieri and Djokanovic this season. I mean, in the last three games, we had more clean sheets than we did in the previous 20. So for me, what he's doing at the moment, there isn't any reason why he shouldn't be offered the job.
Well, the positive signs are there and the feel-good factor's back. Yeah, it's been aided by relegation. Of course, there's no pressure, but he's done exactly what he, you know, was tasked to set out to do, and that's to draw some blueprints for next season.
Well, he's making our points total not embarrassing anymore.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Aren't you disappointed? It was only a few weeks ago where you were saying, we want all of Derby's records.
Yeah, but as soon as we beat Bournemouth, it was like, well, there's no really records to break anymore unless we're going to see eight. But, you know, for me, we are going to break all the records or don't break any at all.
Yes, I agree. You're obviously all broadly positive about Scott Parker. One thing we hear a lot in the English game is that young English coaches aren't afforded the opportunities they should be. Of course, Fulham have an opportunity to afford an opportunity to Parker. But do you worry that perhaps if a more glamorous, fashionable option became available, a foreign boss with more glitz, say a David Wagner, do you think the club might go for style over substance? Because Parker clearly is efficient, but he's not a particularly fashionable name.
I suppose, but I think the one thing the club needs to be careful of is, you know, retaining that identity. Slowly crept back in.
If you get a new manager, you're then starting a new project. Like, if we were going to get a new manager in, surely they'd be basically a done deal by now, because you don't want to waste your pre-season trying to find a new manager. You want them to be coming in on July the 1st or whenever they come back for pre-season, knowing exactly who the manager is. And, you know, again, are we starting a new project? Why not just continue on the project we've started on Scott Parker and see where that takes us next season? That was one of our main problems. See, last time, yes, we continued with Felix McGaff, but, you know, it was like none of the same players. Whereas I feel like this season, we've still got a team that got us promoted last season, apart from, you know, the lone players such as Matt Target, Lucas Piazon. So I think that there's no need to change. And I think, we need a bit of stability, which we said quite a few times under the Khan's leadership. But I think, yeah, I just don't see the reason why to look elsewhere. If Scott Parker, you know, Scott Parker probably had, I know Darren Moore had a bit more coaching experience, but, you know, same pretty managerial experience as Darren Moore here. So I think, when Darren Moore unfortunately got sacked by West Brom, they were fourth in the table. Yeah. They considered themselves in the playoffs now. So if he does anything similar to what Darren Moore did, then there's no reason why we shouldn't give Scott Parker. I mean, he's nominated for manager of the month.
Yeah, it's really funny. I'm just looking at like the odds for the next permanent Fulham manager to see what names being mentioned. Obviously, Steve Clarke, you mentioned, Dom. David Wagner's still on there. Claude Puel's still on there. Michael O'Neill, the Northern Ireland boss, which is an interesting one. Chris Coleman, Djokanovic, Lee Johnson, Carlos Carvajal and Gary Rowett are like the top kind of 10.
I think I'm looking on that list, the only one only realistic one I'd probably take maybe Carlos Carvajal. But for me, I just think Parker deserves a chance. I mean, as Johnny said, we always do complain about young English managers not giving the chance. We've got a brilliant chance here to give Scott Parker a chance, you know. And I think one thing that would help, obviously, we know how important the loan market is in the Championship. Scott Parker's got links to Chelsea, got links to Spurs, got links to West Ham. Mm. That could give us an opportunity to bring in some high quality loan players in.
And if we look at Frank Lampard's Derby as an example, they're a club who've exploited that. And, of course, exploited their manager's contacts, if we're honest, spectacularly. They've got Harry Wilson down the right. They've got Fikayo Tomori at the back. They've got Mason Mount off the left, drifting into the centre. You can do really, really good things if you bring in the young players from top Premier League clubs who might not be ready to feature for a Chelsea or a Liverpool, but can seriously do a job in the Championship.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that Fulham actually did pretty well in our few years in the Championship, is exploit the loan market. Arguably,
Rowan Ince. Lost What Legend Richard Lee, just exploiting the loan market.
Labiad. But yeah. But
he's in a squad of a Champions League semi-finalist, I think.
Oh, really? Oh, there we go. I mean, arguably, it was to our detriment in the end, as we had to sign a load of players, obviously, last summer. But I think the point I was going to make is that with Parker, you're not just getting him, you're getting Stuart Gray and you're getting his mate from Spurs. Is it Matt? Is it the new first team coach, basically, who was with Parker at the under-18s at Spurs. So I think that's definitely a factor as well, because you wouldn't just be losing Parker. you'd be losing the other two. And I think that especially the players really like him. And I love Stuart Gray. What a man.
And we've already lost Gray before. And
I know.
Look where that got us, you know.
Why did you kind of sack him last summer? I don't understand. Like, what actually happened? Like, he was... I don't know, we actually had a half-decent defence in the last year. We got like four home clean sheets in a row or something like that, maybe even more. Got two clean sheets in a row in the playoff semi-final and the final. And then, I mean, that was almost certainly done Stuart Gray. And then he was gone.
So assuming that you were already getting relegated, that we take that as standard, would the ideal situation for you, with that in mind, be to be going back to the Championship with Slavisa Jokanović still in charge?
Yeah, I said before... Slav got sacked, I'd rather go down with Slav than stay up with an Allardyce or a, whoever generic Brexit manager you want to bring in. So I think that, yeah, in ideal, I would have liked to go down with Slav, but Scott Parker for me is the next. You want your players to be playing for the manager. They didn't do that under Ranieri. Mm. All the players seemed to hate him. That McDonald interview that then came out about him saying, well, I knew he was going to be off soon, so that's why I stayed around. And we've got the core ready for next season, unlike last time. So for me, stick with the current project and stick it through and see how Scott Parker does next season.
Yeah, but with Slav, it's something that I've said before, is that yes, it would have been okay to go down with him, but that Huddersfield performance away from home was just it just was a complete betrayal of himself, and the players weren't playing for him anymore, and it was just abysmal to lose to that Huddersfield side in that poor manner. And I think based on that performance, you know, I never like to see a manager sacked based on one performance, but it was almost that was it. Like, that game,
no completely. One should lose to Huddersfield.
No, well, no. Especially I don't know the fact that it was such a it was a rival game already, and whenever it was in November, and we lost in such a pitiful manner, and I think he did have to go based on that game.
It's a tough decision to make, and it'll be a tough one to decide whether Parker should get the job on a permanent basis. What do you think? That number is 0208 70 20 558. We've had a goal in Swansea versus Derby. I had you going for a moment there. It's Swansea 1, Derby 1. It is still in the Champions League. Barcelona 1, Liverpool 0. An away goal, of course, for the Reds would be absolutely massive. But here on the Fulham Fan Show, coming up, Fulham love a screamer. They really do love a belter of a goal. But where have they all been coming from?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And Ryan Barbal's absolute belter to win the game against Cardiff at the weekend was the latest in a long, long line of Fulham screamers this season. Started, of course, in illustrious style by Jean-Michel Seri earlier in the season against Burnley. Why are you scoring so many thunderbolts?
I think the main problem here is we can't run a goal of the season competition because Andre Schürrle might win an award.
No, because Babel's going to win it now.
Yeah, I think just because it's Ryan Babel, he might just pip him. But we have scored absolute screamers. You know, you had Schürrle's away at Cardiff. You had Schürrle's away at Burnley. You got Babel's now. We spoke at Jean-Michel Seri's goal. Even if you could look our goal away at Spurs, it was a great passing move there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've scored some great goals this season.
Well, Babel's goal might even win Brighton's goal of the season as well.
I saw one of the Brighton fan pages, one of their goal of the month was Ryan Babel. So.
And you know what? Babel player of the season. I'm going to keep on blowing that horn.
I'm with you on that.
Is that not a little bit indicative of how the season went, that a man who wasn't actually at the club when the season began has been your standout performer?
Yeah, but I think I know it's different positions, but I think someone showed me a stat that Ryan Babel's had more goal contributions since he joined in January than Dele Alli's had all season.
Exactly. Get him in the team of the year as well, while we're at it.
I mean, he'll do absolutely nothing in the Nations League semi-final in Gramaras.
Of course he won't.
Me and Guy will make sure he doesn't do anything
yes,
up there.
Yes, Tripp's going to have him in his back pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
No need to worry about that. But I'm really happy he's doing well for us, obviously. I mean, yeah.
Well, no, because when we signed him, I was really like, why are we signing Ryan Babel? Like, why are we signing someone who's good on Football Manager in, like, 2008? Like, this isn't
he was quality on Football Manager in 2008.
I know, he was absolute class. He just curls him top bins every single time.
But he's still doing it. No, seriously. He's not the only player doing it for Fulham.
No, but he said after the match that he didn't want to hit the ball like that. He said Cyrus Christie hit him too fast, so he had to lace it across the goal.
Cyrus Christie hitting a football not in the way he meant to.
excuse me. In the stats, it says Christie assist. I think you'll find.
That's all that matters.
That's what is going to go down as a history book.
He's got perfectly weighted.
How many Premier League assists have you got? Exactly. None. Cyrus Christie's got a Premier League assist.
world class right back. I don't know why he's not in the Barcelona team tonight over whoever they're playing there tonight.
Sergio Roberto,
obviously. Yeah, him on one side, Jordi Alba on the other. I mean, what more do you want in life? But no, I think it is weird how many great, because if we look at Premier League seasons gone past, I mean, we'd score like the odd absolute screamer.
The Patrick Kasami goal.
If you look at third,
that's a wonder.
That's probably
goal.
My favourite goal.
That's the best ever Premier League goal.
It has to be, isn't it?
The thing, obviously, seeing that live was great, but the Palace away end is so terrible that. So I see Sasha Reitha ping the ball down the line. I don't see the ball until it lands on Kasami's right foot. His weak foot.
Yeah.
Let's point that out, and he pings it right across the goalie. But I think because Kasami's goal is so good, it takes away from how good the volley is from Steve Sidwell.
Oh, that was an absolute perler as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Ruiz takes a terrible free kick, shock, hits the wall, and then Sidwell on the volley. He's like, no, mate, I'm pinging this top bins past the goalkeeper.
But what about the Senderos overhead kick?
Oh, yeah, that was all the goals in that game were absolute class.
Senderos. Oh, man. Do you reckon he makes Fulham's worst ever Premier League team?
No, because he scored a scissor kick. So, Ian Pearce was around. So
Ian Pearce is class.
Rafik Halice played in the Premier League, so...
Yeah, I know. Senderos is a bit too far. But anyway, back to Babel. One thing we didn't mention in the last little segment is that he's linked with Galatasaray.
Yeah.
I think he can do better.
Come to Fulham.
I mean, he's not going to stay at us, but he can definitely get a Premier League move.
I'm sorry, but if you're Spurs, being linked
Spurs
with
need,
Galatasaray...
Spurs need a big player. I mean, Newcastle, to be fair, Newcastle, with Rafa Benitez has been linked, want to get Ryan Babel. I mean, yeah. Him playing off Rondon, Ayoze Perez, you know... He wouldn't be
a bad shout.
Why
actually.
Wouldn't you? He's going to be... He's a free hit, isn't he? I know he's like 33, but you're not paying any money for him. His wages aren't going to be huge because he's been playing at Fulham and Turkey.
And he's still fully capable of doing it.
Yeah, and he scored like 6 Premier League goals and got like 4 assists in 3 months. He's still got it. Like, why wouldn't you just have a free hit? It's such a no-brainer.
Yeah, he's a free transfer because we got him on a 6-month deal, didn't
exactly,
we?
Exactly, yeah. So why wouldn't you just take a punt? I'm really happy for him, especially on a, I know obviously I don't know him personally, but he got so much stick like when he signed for us from all
a lot from
people,
me,
yeah, being like from Fulham fans and like all these, you know, people in the media and other fans being like, why are you signing a 32-year-old Babel, blah blah blah. But
world class,
yes, he has been world class player of the season.
He also would get quite a lot of stick, of course, if he signed for Galatasaray as a former Besiktas man.
Yeah.
Would he not have to think quite carefully about doing that?
Well, yeah, and it's also going back to the Turkish Super League, which isn't, you know, the most renowned divisions either. Like we've already said, he needs to play in a much more, you know, a competitive division.
Well, especially as he's in the national team squad, the most recent one in March. You know, he probably will be in the squad for the Nations League to play against England. And, you know, he's want to stay in the national team. I don't think playing for Galatasaray and probably getting knocked out in the Champions League by Bate Borisov is really going to help his, you know, national career. So I think he does need to move to a top team, whether that's in the Premier League or whether that's in another division like Serie A, Bundesliga or Liga. So... Yeah, I think he has. There should be Premier League teams interested in him. Even so, if you look at someone like a team like Brighton, let's say, you know, that random guy whose name no one can pronounce, who they signed from the Dutch league,
Jahanbash.
There we go, Mr. Burry, whacking out of the park. Yeah, but if they signed him, in playing off Glenn Murray, I mean, it'd be world class.
Do you think?
No, but no, I think a Premier League team, you know, even I don't know, Bournemouth or actually, you know, he'd be a very West Ham transfer.
Seems like it, doesn't he? Yeah.
Or a promoted side.
I mean, well, it's not going to be Leeds, and West Brom is the best of a bad bunch here. Right?
Yes, I 100%
So
agree.
Leeds, just no one likes Leeds. Villa, I'm not having John Terry go up, because I enjoyed making him cry last season. Lampard, no. So West Brom's your only option.
And Derby. Like, Fulham have got a rivalry Derby as well.
We've systematically eliminated most of the teams who could be in the playoffs just in terms of who Don Betts hates, in terms of individual footballers or ex-pros. Which means...
I agree. I think that is not just who Don hates. I think that is who all Fulham fans hate, to be honest.
It's a general basis consensus.
Yeah, and my friend is a Brighton fan. It feels exactly the same. Like, West Brom is the less of all the evils in the playoffs.
Well, I think my favourite thing is how my mate described the Hawthorns. He said it's a bit of grass and he's bought 4 stands and put it around it. I mean, it is a very generic football stadium. I'm not going to lie. But we haven't been there in a while, actually, so it would be nice to visit back. Another trip to Birmingham's easy.
And so, are you pleased to see Sheffield United go up? Are you pleased to see Norwich go up?
Yeah, I'm happy to see Sheffield United go up. Norwood getting 3 promotions in a row. We might finally get his chance in the Premier League. Chris Wilder, Sheffield United fan, taking his team up. You know, they were quality last season. I think I picked them for top 6 at the start of the season, but not necessarily top 2. Leeds falling apart, shock. Who would have thought that would happen? So, yeah, I'm happy for Sheffield United. Norwich been playing some great football this season. Great turnaround from their poor poor season last year. So, yeah, I'm quite happy with Norwich and Sheffield United going up. And I, to be honest, I'm annoyed we don't get to go to Sheffield United next year. I'm not that bothered about Norwich because I've been there way too many
times. I'm happy with Sheffield, though, just for the pure fact that Wilder was absolutely steaming on TV as well.
And former player Richard Stearman as well. He was, oh, it was so funny.
That is serious.
Richard Stearman was absolutely steaming. Like, there's that screenshot of him like holding an empty pint glass over his head.
Pouring on his head.
Again,
yeah,
like, we don't know if he was drunk.
Oh, come on.
We just know he was holding the
and
pint
then,
glass.
And then, like, that in Wilder and Billy Sharp interview, like, they were having, like, it was like a 7-minute, it was a really funny, like, tweet again, like, it seemed that Sheffield United's social media strategy that day was film everything and film the players drinking more and more and put everything out.
Well, talking of Sheffield Club's social media strategy, talking of Sheffield Club's PR strategy, we've had a little bit of a storm this week because Sheffield Wednesday's chairman saw fit to post a statement congratulating Sheffield United on their promotion to the Premier League, saying this is wonderful news for the city of Sheffield. We'd like to wish our neighbours all the best. And it was responded to, obviously, by a whole army of Wednesday fans going, excuse me, delete this now. How did you respond to this? Were you amused? Did you think it's another sign of the sanitisation of modern football?
It's just been showing who the biggest team in Sheffield is. We all know that, Sheffield United. So.
Yeah. So no sympathy?
No, I think it's hilarious because Wednesday fans get wound up quite easily.
They really do. So a mate of my brother's is a Wednesday fan.
Triggered.
And I'm in a group chat with him and I just posted it with, you know, you've been mugged off by your own club or something really, really basic. And I got a paragraph back, you know, a real proper, you wouldn't understand any of this, you Premier League fans. Grr. Surely, though, to be fair to the Wednesday fans, we shouldn't be in the business of congratulating our rivals.
No, we like Brentford. Or QPR saying, well done Fulham when we got promoted last season.
I think it's even bigger than that. Like, it's like Celtic congratulating Rangers.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I mean, like, Wednesday and Blades hate each other, but we all know Blades are the team are actually playing Sheffield, so they're the true Sheffield team.
Hillsborough's not in Sheffield, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it takes way too long to get to Hillsborough. Bramall Lane you can walk to from the city centre.
Well, Don Betts has solved it yet again, as per. He just, any issue, however complex, I think we need to get him into Palestine probably quite soon. He'd sort that out in a second. He's a mastermind, he's a tactical maestro, and he's also a man who loves the Football League. You know, he was proud to see Fulham come up to the Premier League, but as a man who enjoys a raucous away day, he misses places like Barnsley, places like Sheffield, places like Bolton, who will, of course, not be in the Championship next season. They might not exist next season. But coming up, we'll be asking what you're looking forward to most next season. Is it the away days? Is it the chance to blood the youth? Or is it just Don Betts misbehaving?
This is Love Sport.
It's Johnny Burrow and Fulhamish here on Love Sport Radio for your Fulham fan show. And now it's time to talk about things that we miss, things that we're looking forward to getting back. And talking of things that we miss, spare a thought for Liverpool fans. They really, really miss Luis Suarez. They miss him particularly today because it's currently Barcelona 1, Liverpool 0 in the first leg of their Champions League semi-final. And it had to be Suarez, didn't it?
Yeah, it had to be. It was great news. News everyone wants to see.
Definitely.
New Liverpool just being terrible. Former player scoring against them. It's just a beautiful game. It's very best.
Right. Well, I'm not going to allow you, frankly, to slate Liverpool any further. So we're going to turn our attentions to more positive things. And the positive side of relegation. It's something that some fans, particularly of clubs that are just so accustomed to the Premier League that they can't think of anything else, consider relegation to be the worst thing in the world, perhaps even the end of the world. The Championship, what's that? But you guys know those hallowed grounds quite well. And in a sense, you're actually quite looking forward to being back there.
Just look at the Villa-Leeds game. That's why we love the Championship.
Yeah.
That was vintage Skybet. Absolute vintage Skybet, that was. It was phenomenal, because I think the Arsenal-Leicester game was on at the same time, and I think I switched over just 10 minutes into the second half because it seemed like Arsenal weren't going to try to do anything in that game.
Funny that.
That is a hammed-up drama we all love, isn't it?
I know, because, I mean, the goal should stand, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
The goal should 100% stand. Well, it did stand, but I mean...
I genuinely don't understand why everyone got so upset about
it's
it.
Because Tyler Roberts went to play the ball out
he
and he didn't.
No, he played a no-look reverse pass. Yeah, that's all he did.
It's the single greatest dummy of all time. No, I take your point. He behaved badly, right? But it is the fundamental part of football. It's the first thing you get taught as a kid. It gets screened at you. Play till the whistle. I've got no sympathy.
My problem with the goal, Leeds' goal, is...
Scored by Leeds.
No, it's offside.
Oh, yeah.
It's 100% offside, which Alano's completely ignored. And it's a great finish.
Also, Patrick Bamford's amateur dramatics. And
I won't quote what Ryan Connolly called him on Twitter a few years ago, but I think a lot of people were bringing up that tweet on on social media.
Interesting as well to see, of course, Bamford be charged retrospectively by the Football League for deceiving a match day official.
He's deceived people that he's a good footballer for years, so he's very good at that. So I don't understand. My favourite thing about this is Pontus Janssen trying to take out Albert Adoma when Bielsa's telling the Leeds players to let him. And Pontus Janssen is like, no.
No, Pontus Janssen is a terrible
passion
man.
Merchant. Is
a terrible
what?
Man.
I loved, him chasing back. When everyone else was leaving, he was like, no, I will have my clean sheet bonus. I will have it.
I'm not buying that. Like, I think if he actually wanted to tackle him, he could have done. Like, it was a fake
tackle. No, he couldn't. He was miles away from him and he was sprinting after him as fast as he could.
What? No, when he walked through?
Yeah.
No. Adoma just
was really going for
it. No, Adoma would just like walked past and
It's poor etiquette from Albert Adoma to not put the ball in the line, go on his knees and head it on the floor.
Yes. I think we can all agree on that one. Of course, that is the kind of housery, Dom, as you would put it, that we do get in the Championship, perhaps more than we get in the Premier League. We also see classics. We see multi-goal thrillers with the likes of Villa and Nottingham Forest earlier in the season. So what are a few of the things that you're looking forward to?
Well, this is a lot of the thing I look at the Premier League is, yes, there's less games, but a lot of the games are all Southern and London-based. You don't really get that much opportunities up north. I mean, the last time we actually went up north, and I'm not including Wolves this weekend because it's not up north, was Burnley back in January, where we've got Preston to look forward to, Wigan to look forward to, Barnsley to look forward to, Sheffield Wednesday to look forward to, a lovely Saturday trip to Kenilworth Road in Luton.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm definitely snapping.
I mean, because I've been in the away end at Luton before, and you literally just walk over people's gardens.
Really?
It's class.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that away. I'm looking forward to the Barnsley away, mainly because
Wigan away
opening
day of the season is just needed because I've missed Wigan away.
And a DW, yeah.
What is so magical, and I can't believe I'm about to say this sentence, what is so magical about an away day in Wigan?
Just everything, because you can get the long train, which takes about 3 hours.
Good pies?
Yeah, they do a great pie.
It's a great pub right by the station.
Yeah. Wigan North Western, just what a station.
Yeah, really good station. top station.
Just top station.
Where does it rank? So it goes Love Sport at number one, and then it's what, Wigan?
Yeah, Wigan North Western. Preston's decent. Yeah. I rate Crewe. Because Crewe's got a pub in the station, Legends Bar, I think it's called. But he's also got the British Line just down the road from the station.
Beyond your favourite pubs, Dom, and the stations, we've established Wigan. It's, of course, an opportunity as well to use youngsters. We saw Ryan Sessegnon really, really excel, come into his own in the Championship. Do you think there are others waiting in the wings at Fulham who actually would never have got a chance in the Premier League, but at that lower level will have the opportunity to step up?
We've got to see the other Sess.
Yeah, Stephen Sessegnon. He's got to be better than Cyrus Christie.
Yeah, so come on.
Let's give Stephen Sess a chance. You know, Luca Della Torre had his chance in the League Cup this season. He played well in the away game at Mill, where there seemed to be more Fulham fans than Mill fans at that particular game. And, you know, he played very well in that game. You know, I've heard rumours that Jerome Opoku, the defender, has been told he's going to get a chance to make his point this season. Obviously, he's been in the last two pre-season training camps. I'd love to see Matt O'Reilly get given a go because, you know, there's the potential's there. You know, Tottenham, Man City, Barcelona, Juventus have all been linked with him in the last few months. So, yeah, I'd see him play as well. So I think the main ones for Fulham fans are probably De La Torre, Sess and Matt O'Reilly, I'd say.
Even players like Timmy Abraham, you know, Santos Klaas as well. Who knows, next season, you know, it's another campaign. It's a different environment for them to get themselves used to. It could happen that they, you know, first couple of games sitting on the bench.
Tyrese Francois is another name.
Tyrese Francois, yeah.
I think, but like, a similar thing happened last time we got relegated, in that we were all so excited for youth, and then our average age in the first game of the season away at Ipswich at the end was like 20 or something.
We played Karen Burgess in Holden midfield though.
Yeah, but yeah, we came 18th that season. Like, I'd rather actually get in some players and come in the playoffs than play a lot.
No, I understand.
Bed them in slowly.
Yeah, but like, there's only so many we can bed in. You know.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, a lot of players there. Not all of them are going to get playing time.
That's completely fair. I mean, like we said, I mean, I'd like to see O'Reilly. Definitely someone who deserves a shot at first team football.
I think he's got the physicality about him to play in the Championship. He's not a small 5'8" centre midfielder. He's 6'1", 6'2". He's been playing in a deeper role for the under-23s in recent seasons. And I think, you know, obviously he sees himself more as a creative midfielder. But, you know, if let's say we need someone to play that box-to-box role, You know, I think maybe, or paint a deeper line creative role, I think is an option we can use. I think, I'm not saying we need to start every week, but I think they're definitely going to be a key part of the squad.
Very exciting for those youngsters to get a chance. What else is there? Is there anything as a final point that you're really desperate to be returned to?
The yearly slog with QPR and Brentford, when those matches rear their ugly heads, you know. I really, really love the camaraderie that goes around those games just because of the pure fact that we know that we're a superior club. We really are in this part of the world.
I hate going to Loftus Road, though.
Loftus Road and Griffin Park are probably the worst places you could ever imagine.
Griffin Park, of course, is set for an update very, very soon. And Loftus Road could be quite a happy hunting ground for a lot of clubs next season. The state that QPR are in, it's not going to be a good season.
It's just a nasty place to go to, though, isn't it? You know, I just feel on edge every time you walk around a corner getting your way to the actual stadium itself. I still go, though. It's different than walking through Bishop's Park, isn't it?
So, yeah. That, as they say, is football. It terrifies me, but still I turn up. It causes me pain, but still I turn up. You'll be turning up, of course, in their droves this weekend as Fulham take on Wolverhampton Wanderers. And coming up, we'll be chatting to Sylvie Devaney of the Wolves Analysis blog to find out just how Espirito Santo is getting things so right.
This is Love Sport.
That time of the show when we turn our attentions to Fulham's next opponent. And of course, this week it is Wolverhampton Wanderers, a high-flying Wolverhampton Wanderers side who keep upsetting big teams. I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Sylvie Devaney of the Wolves Analysis blog. Good evening, Sylvie. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Wolves have had a lot of joy against the top six this season, but perversely, they've actually struggled on occasion against the smaller clubs, not least Huddersfield. Are you a bit worried about the prospect of informed Fulham?
I am, if I'm honest, because I think the last time we played you in December, it was a bit of a different ball game. You weren't doing as well. And I don't know, we just really struggle against teams in like the bottom half of the table. I think we played Brighton the other week and it was 0-0. We just haven't found a system to break down those kind of teams. It's worrying me.
Yeah, obviously that game was on Boxing Day, wasn't it? The one all draw.
Great occasion.
And obviously that was a point where we were starting to get back into some. When I say something with defensive solidity, I mean we weren't conceding three or four goals every game. So yeah. I think Mawson had just was starting to show his leadership qualities. I think we just got the 0-0 draw at Newcastle, which was our first clean sheet of the season. You know, it's quite an even game, and obviously as we've seen, you know, your record against top six is absolutely phenomenal this season, and it's against lesser teams, and you know, obviously. Obviously, this game is important for you. Obviously, you still are going after that seventh place because if then Man City end up winning the FA Cup, it means Wolves would be in Europa League next season. And we know, Fulham fans, how great finishing seventh and going on Europa League run is. So, do you think that the players are going to be right up for this game just to make sure they can get that seventh place?
Sorry, can you say that again? The last bit.
Yeah, do you think the Wolves players are going to be right up for this game just to make sure they can secure that seventh place over the likes of Leicester and Watford?
Yeah, I think they really need to look at their performance against Brighton and work out how they can like break down teams. They need to get some kind of result from this, whether it's a draw or a win. I don't think it'll be really tough to hold on to seventh if we come out with no points, because we're only 3 points ahead of Leicester and 4 points ahead of everyone else. So it's like, if everyone gets results and we don't, the players definitely need to look at their last performance and see how they can improve. I think personally, I think we should be playing more stronger players. So we've got players who are fast and we've got players who are skilled. But I think we've got players like Saïss who have been given a little bit of an overlook the past few games. But he's very strong defensively and he can occasionally pop up with like a scrappy goal. I think that's the kind of team we need against Fulham at the weekend. I think we need people who are strong and people who can be scrappy when they need to be.
Absolutely. Something we see a lot in the Premier League and across world football, really, is when a team has a very impressive season, but not such an impressive season that they're playing Champions League football or challenging for league titles, is massive clubs come and start circling. We saw this with the Monaco team of a few years ago who won the league. Is there a concern amongst the Wolves fan base that players like Jota, players like Raul Jimenez, who I know, in fact, has just arrived on a free, on a permanent deal, I should say, certainly not free, very expensive. but Ruben Neves, Raul Moutinho, there are lots of players in this team, Matt Doherty as well, who bigger Premier League clubs, no disrespect, but bigger, richer sides might be looking at and licking their lips. Do you think we're going to see an exodus?
I don't know if it'll be a complete clear out. I think there will be a few players who are definitely targeted. The only thing that I can say really for myself is I think a couple of the players are really enjoying themselves here. So I know Jota and Jimenez are partnering up really well. So I'd like to think that we'd be able to keep on to Jota maybe just because Jimenez is here. But I do, like you said, I do think a couple of the players will get targeted. I mean, we got João Moutinho. I think it was for $5 million. He was an absolute bargain and he's been one of the best players this season. So I think people are definitely going to be looking at us and going, right, who can we poach from them?
Yeah, who can we nick? Talking of poaching, he can score poachers' efforts. He can score goals of all kinds. And he scored again in the Champions League tonight. It's Barcelona 2, Liverpool 0. Lionel Messi, of course, had to be the man other than Suarez on the score sheet.
I was going to ask, as well as like keeping hold of your players, I mean, you're going to want to strengthen as well. And I guess that part of that will depend on if you do end up being in Europe. But either way, what areas do you think you need to, you know, strengthen this summer?
I think personally, like we've got one of the best, we've had one of the better defensive records in the season, I should say, not the best. But the area we've got better in is scoring. So at the start of the season, we had a lot of problems with scoring goals. Like we weren't scoring, but we weren't doing badly either. And now we've really improved on that. I think I'd like to see maybe one or two more forwards and strikers coming in who can be either used as replacements or that we can rotate. Because I think if Jota and Jimenez are out at any point next season, say if I manage to keep hold of them, there's no one I can see really stepping up and scoring the kind of goals, like the tallies they've been scoring this season for us. So I'd definitely like to see a couple more forwards coming in so we've got a good squad there in case of anything happening, injury-wise or anything.
Yeah, and I mean, as an aside to that, if you do bring some forwards, then, I mean, Fulham have been linked with Cavallero before in the past and Helder Costa. I mean, do you reckon they might be moved on in the summer as well?
Potentially. I think the issue is when you get better quality players coming, it's sad, but the other players get overlooked. But that's not to say that Costa and Cavallero aren't good players. It's just that they've not been as on form this season as the other strikers that we've got. I think Costa's had a harder time than Cav has. So maybe he might be one of the ones looking at going. But I don't think any club would be lucky to have him if he can get back to that form that he had for us in the Championship. I think he's a good player. He's just been lacking a little bit lately, sadly.
Okay, just casting our minds to the game at the weekend, of course. Fulham are currently, you know, working their way through a relatively strange purple patch where we've had, obviously, three consecutive wins with three consecutive clean sheets. And Scott Parker certainly implemented a little bit more of a familiar identity at Craven Cottage. Are there any aspects and elements of the White squad, you know, certainly in the last couple of weeks, which concern you at all? What areas do you feel that, you know, Wolves actually need to be targeting in order to stifle our momentum?
I think what's good that I've noticed about Fulham is that, okay, you say you've got your three consecutive clean sheets, but it's against like the Everton team. They're playing really well at the moment. Like, to me, that was a big statement to get a clean sheet against Everton, win 2-0, because they are doing quite well themselves at the moment. And I think Fulham are going to be coming onto this, having scored in all three of those games, kept a clean sheet, and they're going to be really confident. Defensively, they've definitely shored up. And like against Brighton, we couldn't break down their defence at all. We just couldn't find a way through to get a goal. And I think with that defensive confidence that they've had from the past three games, that was definitely a concern for me, not being able to break down the Fulham defence, I think.
Sylvie, the biggest question of all is, will Wolves be able to break down that Fulham defence? And what will the score be? I need a score prediction from you, I'm afraid.
A score prediction. I think this is going to be a really, really tough one. I'm probably going to stick a bet on a 1-1 draw.
One all draw.
That's merely in hope.
That's all right. That's that merely in hope. Well, it's very measured. You're very popular here in the Fulham Fan Show studio. Lovely to speak to you as well. Wonderful stuff. Thanks ever so much for your time. Sylvie Devaney there, who is, of course, of the Wolves Analysis blog, doing great work on their tactics and a very complex tactical side as well. One that's set up to soak all that pressure up and then spring forward very, very quickly. The whole width of the team changing in an instant. Fulham are going to have a tough ask to deal with all of that counter-attacking pressure and that offensive pressure all round. And coming up, I'll be asking my fine...
This is Love Sport.
Fulham panellists, whether they really have got a chance. You're listening to the Lionel Messi... hang on a minute. No, it's the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. But Lionel Messi is a very, very popular man in this studio because the boys aren't keen on Liverpool and the Reds are coming unstuck in the last 10 minutes at the Camp Nou. Lionel Messi has struck again. He scored in the 75th and 82nd minutes. It is now Barcelona 3, Liverpool 0. An away goal in the last 10 minutes for Klopp's men is now absolutely critical if they're going to have any hope of progress at all, really. Gents, is this tie over?
Yeah. Well, what a shame.
Yeah, but they're not an English team because they don't want to be known as English.
No, they're Scouts, not English.
Yeah, they're Scouts, not English. So.
But they are a team with an illustrious history of coming back from the brink in this competition. Can you ever rule them out?
No, yes.
I think at four you can, but
no,
at three?
No, I think everyone says, oh, but if Liverpool get an away goal, you're acting like Barcelona aren't going to score at Anfield.
No, I'm not saying that if Liverpool get an away goal, they'll win the tie. I'm saying that Liverpool absolutely have to get one to have any chance at all.
No, to have any chance. But everyone said, oh, if Liverpool lose 2-1 today, it's a good result. It's not a good result.
It's not a terrible result.
No, it's not a terrible result, but Barcelona are going to score at Anfield. There's nothing they can do. But you can have Virgil van Dijk and Nemanja Vidic at the back. Barcelona would still probably score. So I think that, you know, Liverpool... I mean, I hope this totally derails their title push and they lose on the weekend. But
couldn't have happened to a nicer club.
Yeah, I know.
How funny would it be if they just didn't win a trophy this year after all of this?
Beautiful.
Would you not feel for them? Is there
No.
But, okay, if we set aside the fact that it's Liverpool for just a moment, let's talk about this objectively. A club who are in the running to win a vast swathe of top European honours end up not winning any. Is that not tough to take?
No, because it's not my club, so I don't have to care.
Yeah, try harder.
Try harder, sign another world-class Egyptian forward and stop crying.
Yeah.
Is that the message?
Basically.
Need to grow up.
Need to grow up. My Lord, very little sympathy. If you're just joining us, it is, of course, Barcelona 3, Liverpool 0, and there is glee around me in the studio for the Fulham Fan Show.
Beautiful game at its very best, once again.
Beautiful game at its very best. You'll, of course, be hoping to see the beautiful game at its very best this weekend.
I don't think beautiful and Wolverhampton can be used in the same sentence.
Well, in a footballing context, perhaps they can. It's Fulham versus Wolves. We were just speaking to Sylvie Devaney there of the Wolves Analysis blog. She wasn't actually all that confident. Do you think you've got a chance?
At Molineux, I'm not really too sure.
Our record is not the greatest.
No.
I think the last one we won in the league there would have been maybe 09-10 or 08-9-10-11, somewhere around there. Because I remember Andy Johnson. I don't think we won that game. I think we might have even drawn that game. Mm. I don't remember the last time we won away at Molineux. Because obviously we beat them on penalties in the League Cup a few years ago. Was it FA Cup?
It was FA Cup, yeah.
That was phenomenal. Because so many people was on, I think it was like a 10:45 or 10:52 train back to London. I think it might have been one of the last ones. And so everyone was standing at the back of the stand, obviously on the side, waiting for, was it Rodriguez scored the winning penalty, I believe?
Yeah, maybe.
And everyone just pinged it, but it was obviously snowing so much at night. So everyone was just stacking it on the run back to Wolverhampton train station. But you know, Molineux, I mean, it depends what away end we're going to be in this time. I've been in three different away-ins in the same ground. Obviously, I've been on the side at Molineux, been in the up in the Gods that we were on the Friday night last season, and then I've also been on the same stand where the Gods is on the other side, just behind the goal. So it'll be interesting to where they decide to sit us this time.
If Kearney can pull out another, you know, howitzer as well from the edge of the box.
Oh, that 4-4 again was just crazy.
Yeah. Thankfully, I missed the 2-0 loss last season.
Oh, that was Stefan Janssen, false nine.
Oh, that was the... Friday night, wasn't it?
It was a very, very limp performance.
In November.
But that 4-4 was absolutely incredible.
Outrageous.
Like, yeah. But to be, what were we, 3-1 up?
We're 3-1 up, yeah.
When they got made it 3-2, you knew they were coming back into the game.
Yeah.
And then Floyd Ise just pops up at the end.
The back stick.
He's going to do it again.
With the diving header. Yeah, you might do it again.
He could do it
He's
again.
Still a Fulham player.
He likes scoring away at the moment as well.
Yeah,
really.
He does, yeah. Yeah, but no, I think this is a game which, you know, it's another chance to spoil someone else's season. Spoil Wolves going for that seventh place, so why not?
It's such a vindictive man, Dom Pets.
No, but then Wolves can ruin Wolves' season, and they can ruin Liverpool's season on the last day.
I think Barca are already doing a pretty good job of that, it has to be said. If you're just joining us, it is, of course, Barcelona 3, Liverpool 0 at the Camp Nou in the first leg of their Champions League semi-final. Now, thinking about the relationship off the pitch between Fulham and Wolves, does it frustrate you as Fulham fans that, to people who perhaps don't watch Championship football, of the promoted sides this season, Fulham have taken a load of stick for spending a lot of money? They've said, well, look at Fulham. They spent 100 million quid. They thought they could buy Premier League survival, and they've been proven wrong. And then Wolves are touted as this opposite example of a side who've done things in the right way and haven't spent. Whereas the reality of the situation is that Wolves were spending a lot of money even last year in the Championship with the help of a super agent.
The thing is with Wolves, we all spend a lot of money, but Wolves have done it in a way that no one else has done before. They got all of their, we got Premier League quality players on loan deals with a view to permanent buy them at the end of the season, which, if it pays off, is great, because you're going to tear up the league and you're going to have these players as permanent players when you get promoted the following season. I think that's what's done them great. Yes, it looks at a lot of signings, but a lot of them were at the club last season.
You look at
loads of players in the midfield, like Neves as well. So I think, you know, Wolves, it's maybe a new way of doing it with the whole third party ownership situation. Was it Mina Raiola who's the...
No, it's Jorge Mendes.
Oh, Jorge Mendes, George one Mendes. Of the super agents.
I don't think it's third party ownership, by the way. It's just the fact that they're his clients.
Yeah. I mean, or the way that how you get these super agents, you own so many players. You know, Mina, if you look at Mina Raiola, for example, he's got, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo,
Ibrahimovic,
Martin Jol. I mean, he's got
the big three.
Yeah, all of the big clients. But it's a new way, maybe with financial fair play coming in, which wasn't there when City and Chelsea were buying the league, that this may be a new way for them to get up there. And for the way they, if you look at the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea and United, the way they perform this season, there's no chance, if Wolves do this sort of system again the next couple of seasons, they can't challenge for the top six in the coming years.
We're just having another look at that Lionel Messi free kick for Barcelona. It is staggering. He is just an extraordinary footballer. It's the best part of 25 yards. He's under all that pressure of a big Champions League night, and he just bends it into the top left-hand corner. Absolutely surreal footballing brilliance. Is he the best we've ever seen? Is he better than Ronaldo?
I still rate Ronaldo.
More highly? Messi. Really?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but Messi, to be considered in the same bracket as Ronaldo, for me, has to do it in another division.
Yeah, I accept that argument. Really, I thought you were going to say he has to do it for Argentina, and that's an argument that really frustrates me.
But that's just the whole Argentina conundrum, really. They've got, whereas Ronaldo, he's this world class player who's compared to the rest of his team. Whereas you look at Argentina's attackers, you've got Mauro Icardi, you've got Paulo Dybala,
you've got Higuain, you can't hit a Barndor with a
machine. You've got Gonzalo Higuain. You know, you've got so many players who missed out in the summer. You know, Mauro Icardi missed out in the World Cup. I mean, that's ludicrous.
A travesty, really.
It's ludicrous.
For you, Dom, if you had to pick one of the two, I mean, we've seen Messi again. We hear, of course, that the Champions League is Ronaldo's competition. Messi isn't far behind him in terms of goal scoring. Another cracking brace tonight could yet become a hat-trick. Is he the greatest?
For me, I've always been Messi over Ronaldo. Although you can say he hasn't done it in another division, but he's playing for the best team in the world. Like, why, or one of the biggest teams in the world in Barcelona, why would he want or need to move elsewhere?
Yeah.
You know, he's being able to adapt in different teams. I know it's in the same division, but, you know, when he first came along, you know, he came with like Ronaldinho, David Villa. He's moving into it, then he had Xavi, Iniesta.
He is since the age of about 21 adapting into teams that are built around him.
Because he's so good.
Yeah, what?
Chicken and egg.
Why, if he's playing in one of the best leagues in the world, in La Liga, who've had the most European quarter and semi-finals in the last 5-6 years or 10 years even, why does he need to move to another league? What proof is there that the Premier League is better than La Liga? Why does he might want to go, because it might be a downgrade? His family are going to be settled in Spain. He's been there since he was 12-13 years old, and I think
and the same height, by the way.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you can point to him on an international level, but I just think that's down to Argentina being just perennial bottle jobs.
And if you've just tuned in and you're wondering why we're having the perennial Messi versus Ronaldo debate, it is, of course, because Messi is doing things only Messi can do. A glorious 25-yard free kick for his second goal against Liverpool.
And it's 600th.
There we go. Guy Barlow is always there. It's glorious stuff from Messi. It's Barcelona 3, Liverpool 0 with a few minutes to play. Guy, just quickly, if you had to pick Messi or Ronaldo.
Messi, definitely, yeah.
You're 3-1 down, Cam.
I don't mind.
It's okay. We will be hoping, of course, that Fulham aren't 3-1 down come the weekend. Wolves are a scary prospect, but they're a prospect who, when they've been at their most successful, as we were saying to Sylvie Devaney of Wolves Analysis blog, they're at their best when they're soaking up pressure. And I think Fulham will be a bit clever, won't they? They're not going to throw the kitchen sink at Wolves because they'll know that all that will come back is that same sink thrown rather harder. So do you think it's going to be a case of perhaps being a bit cautious?
Well, I guess so. And once again, we've got nothing to play for. It's almost like, you know, Homer Simpson being punched in the face by, you know, Mike Tyson a million times in that episode, and then just, you know, flooring them with one little deft attack. We just got to take it as it comes, because Wolves are obviously going to, you know, come out and give us a lot of pressure, because they've got a lot to play for themselves. But for us, you just got to go out there and just enjoy yourselves again. You know, what do we really need to prove?
Yeah, I think Newcastle is in a game it's easy to win for us. And I think for me, it's just so we finish the season on a respectable points tally. So when people look back in years at the table, they don't think, oh, Fulham and Huddersfield were so cut adrift. If we were actually remain ready to be close to Cardiff, it would just look like a team who just weren't good enough of a league instead of a team who were just in embarrassment for most of the season.
I don't know. I think that the end of this season is kind of a bittersweet, isn't it? Because the last three games have actually been quite enjoyable. And
we're going to finish next season on 51 games unbeaten.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to clip that. This time next year, you're going to be in 12th.
This,
and I'm going to
play
that.
This time next week when we've lost to Wolves.
I'll be really surprised if we get a result at Wolves, actually.
No, but, I think I said that between the last three games, Cardiff, Newcastle and Wolves, I said if Pug gets 4 points, he'll get the job, and he's got three of them already. And I think Newcastle we can win, and I think Wolves is just about, you know, not, I don't, because again, they don't seem to play well against poor teams. We got a good point against them at home and they weren't that good that day. We probably should have won that game, I'm being perfectly honest. And you know, I think that the team seems to be confident apart from our defenders kicking each other and, you know, knocking them out unconscious, which didn't really touch on in today's hope. I think Dennis Adoy is perfectly fine. Guy, I hope you're okay.
Yeah, I pray
for Dennis.
He'll be back for the championship, don't worry, to score the winner in the final this time, the playoff final, let alone the playoff semi. What an absolute legend.
Another glorious header. Well, it's that time of the show when I ask you for your predictions. Dom, let's start with you. What are you going for? We've got all kinds of difficult decisions to make.
This game, I think we can definitely take the game to them. But I'm going to go for 2-1 Fulham.
2-1 Fulham, he loves it. Cam, what are you saying?
I still think that the bubble's going to be burst. I think we're going to be losing about 2-0.
Positive as ever. And Guy Barlow?
I'm with Cam, I'm afraid. I think 3-0 Wolves.
3-0 Wolves. Well, Fulham. It might not be good news. Sorry, 3-0 Fulham. It might not be great news for Fulham, but it has to be said that whilst it wouldn't be good news for English football, a Champions League final featuring Barcelona versus Ajax would have quite a ring to it. Join us next week on the Fulham Fan Show.
This is Love Sport.